the dozens of Canucks Central listeners. There's more than a dozen.
I mean, dozens of people that agree with your take that Lekkomäki is winning the Calder Trophy.
Well, Austin Langley says, I have him for the Rocket. So, unlike your Kiefer Sherwood will score 63 goals take, I actually said this one out loud.
This one's out loud, yeah.
Now, I will say, you know, Connor Bedard won the Calder last year with just 68 games played.
So. Yeah, Connor Bedard.
fair enough. Hey, Alex Nedeljkovic got a Calder finalist nomination a few years ago. He played fewer than 25 games. He was still a rookie the next year.
Does Lekkomäki wear a goalie mask?
Fair enough. Fair enough. I'm just saying, it's a possibility.
Yeah, and obviously Josh clipped it and posted it on social media. So it's Godspeed to your mention. Should I quote tweet it and put you on blast or just leave it?
I'll let you decide with that. Might have to mute the conversation in due time.
It's like, take a load of this guy.
Don't put pressure on prospects. Also.
Also.
Jonathan Lekkomäki could win the Calder if he plays well. I never actually said that.
It's
said
a duality.
He could be in the conversation for the Calder.
The duality of man has never been on full display as greatly as this is.
Let's bring in our next guest. That is Don Taylor. Donnie and Dolly, 10 to noon on Check TV, and he joins us every single Monday here on Canuck Central. Wouldn't be like Canucks fans to put a little too much pressure on the kid, hey?
No, sorry, guys. You know, I was listening to, it must have been another station, and there was some crazed radio host talking about the possibility of Jonathan Lekkomäki winning the Calder Trophy. That couldn't have been you guys, one of you guys, could it?
It was Dan.
I said he could get in the conversation if he plays well. If he plays the full 69 games remaining, he's going to play top 6 minutes. Why not?
Well, hold on a second here. All joking aside, if you play that back, And Sat, I think you can back me up here. So can Josh. You said at one point that we're all thinking that. No, we're not.
No, we're not. Exactly.
You're the first and only person. Oh, maybe that one customer of yours who emailed in. I hate to be nice to you, but you said we're all saying no, we're not. And then the justification of 15th overall. Do you remember Jake Virtanen? Do you remember Olli Juolevi? I will say this though. You mentioned other guys who haven't played many games, or relatively speaking, haven't played his full 82 game season and won the Calder. That was Pavel, right? That was Pavel Bure.
Pavel Bure, yeah.
But it was, I believe, November 5th, 1991, and he ends up winning the Calder. Didn't play a whole season. So there is some hope out there. That was, you know what? That was an awesome. I guarantee nobody turned away from that first segment.
Yeah, I was as shocked as you were. I'm like, wait, what? We're talking about him? Like, he was literally talking about, are we rushing this kid too soon? And 10 minutes later, he's handing him the Calder Trophy. But you know what, Donnie? If he actually does it by some way, somehow, we're never going to hear the end of it.
Well, no, hold on a second. Riccio's off to the, I don't know, well, first of all, you're going to get a massive raise. You'll be the greatest radio host in the history of radio. So, yeah, you'll never hear the end of it. That was something else. That's awesome. I love it. It's bold.
My mic somehow got unplugged there for a second. We like our bold takes here on Canuck Central. It's Dan Riccio. Who unplugged my mic? That's crazy.
I think that was subconsciously you trying to help yourself from getting into any more trouble than you already
Michael
are.
I mean, Michael Bunting was a Calder finalist 3 years ago. I mean, it's not that wild.
He hasn't played a single game yet.
Yeah, I know. Most rookies haven't, Sat. That's the thing. That's the thing about rookies.
Yeah.
All right.
Hey, listen, everybody hopes you're right.
Yes.
I mean, pardon me, anybody who's a Canuck fan hopes you're right.
Yeah.
That would be just something else. Because if he wins, if he's even in contention, it means they've had a great season, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And maybe their home record gets better. So there's that. So you've got people on your side in terms of hoping it happens. I'm just not so sure. I'm pretty sure you're alone. and except for that one customer.
Yeah, Nathan and Surrey, we're riding or dying on this hill. That's that much I do know. All right, so Lekkerimäki is coming up, and they get Calgary tomorrow. But looking back at Saturday's game, the third period really unraveled for this team. And, you know, the you just kind of mentioned it there, the lack of success on home ice. Is there something there with that? What's going on with this team when some good teams are rolling into town right now?
Yeah, it's interesting because 13 goals against in their last two home games, both resounding, embarrassing losses. One at the end of a homestand, or sort of a homestand, and the one at the beginning of a homestand where maybe you could use that excuse of, oh, they're coming off a road trip. Although the road trip was in California. It wasn't like it was back east. So it's really a head-scratcher. This team is better than that, better than those two games. The Devils are a very good team. So maybe that loss, you could maybe explain that loss that way. Oilers made the Stanley Cup last year. But just that third period, you know what was disappointing, guys, is it started out 3-0, and then it got really good. Yeah. You know, you had the two Canuck goals, and you know, Pettersson arguably playing his best game, contributing on both ends of the ice. And everybody, you know, my whole family were just waiting for that really exciting third period, and it was just a dud. And maybe the only people not looking forward to it were the Canucks. It was really, really disappointing. It was a case of the floodgates opening against a really good team, but to have that happen, those lopsided losses, two games in a row, that and the Canucks are supposed to be right up there with the Oilers. Certainly supposed to be right up there with the Devils. That's really disappointing.
Yeah, 100%, right? And I think as far as the other bit of storyline about those losses, the two bad home losses, the last two, was the reaction of the fans. A lot of fans left early, obviously. There was even somebody throwing a jersey on the ice after the Oilers game. I mean, everyone's, you know.
Three, two.
Yeah,
three, two.
Yeah. He was on one.
Don't put
one,
that on
yeah.
me. Come on.
Yeah. But yeah, so, and there was some criticism about the fans because they left early and, you know, they weren't really happy with what happened. But they've only won a single game at home ice so far, right? And when you look at them losing 6-0 against the Devils and then giving up 7 goals against the Oilers, I think that's the first time they've given up 6-plus goals in back-to-back games on home ice. And considering it's not cheap to go to games, I can understand why there would be frustration. And I don't think the frustration is about the Canucks as a whole over the season. I mean, they're still 7-3-3, and it hasn't been the best start, but they're fine as far as where they are in the standings. But when you're a paying customer and you see two really bad performances back-to-back, I can understand why there's frustration by those fans.
You know, there's so many things when it comes to pro sports, what you just talked about. So many things come down to business. You know, what's good for the business of the hockey team? And, you know, you can say, well, we're playing great on the road. And they are, you know, 6 straight road wins. But when you're losing games at home like that, that's bad for business. And I'm not saying everybody should throw their, you know, sweaters, their jerseys onto the ice. That's a little ridiculous at this point. But I just worry if this trend continues, what's that going to mean I know Francesco Aquilini has a lot of money business wise. I'm sure he's going to be okay. But to get focused on the hockey team, that can't be good for business, and that has to be a worry for the Canucks. They have to turn this thing around starting tomorrow against Calgary. And you know, and the other thing, guys, we talk about these two straight losses. You know, Calgary comes into town, and that reminds us that, you know, that first game of the season, they have 3-goal lead at home.
Yep.
Twice, 3-0 and 4-1. And they end up losing that game and then losing the next game against Philadelphia, where they had a lead on home ice. It's just really, 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 really hard to explain for what is a really good team. And, they have to turn that around. I'm sure they're thinking of it. I wonder how nervous they're going to be tomorrow, or will it inspire them? Because they know they're better than that.
Since I'm a glass half full guy today, instead of focusing on how poor the defense was, it was Elias Pettersson's best game of the season, right? First multi-point night. You could see, like, honestly, at the rink, you could see it from the first shift. I walked over to Satinbick, and I was like, hey, Petey's going tonight.
And he also said he's winning the Art Ross Trophy now.
He's got 69 games to get back in the Hart Trophy conversation. But it was nice to see. I mean, it's unfortunate there wasn't a whole lot else going well for the team, but, like, he looked on it. There was a different level of conviction to his game and urgency that we just haven't seen from Pettersson's game to this point of the season.
I think when you go to games, whether you're a member of the media or a fan, the one thing you really notice about Pettersson, and this has been the case from day one, is that he really, really cares about what happens defensively. And when he's got that going, usually it results in some pretty good offense as well. He made two very good defensive plays in that game. And I think that really, and that you couldn't help but notice, no matter how much or how little you know about hockey, that they were very obvious, really good defensive plays. One on the PK.
Yeah.
And he was being used on the PK. And I think that really gets him going, really fires him up. I think it's important to use him on the PK at this point as well, with the way things have been going for him offensively. I don't know if that makes any sense. But
yeah.
I think things like that get him going, where it's not necessarily scoring a goal, not necessarily, you know, coming up with a great assist, although that would be outstanding. But I think when he plays well defensively, that results in good offense for him. So much of hockey is between the ears. So much of it is mental. And I think that really, really gets him going. So that was really good to see for a lot of Canuck fans.
That's a great point about the PK and PD, because what we also saw when Bruce came in is exactly that. He used PD on the PK and got him involved in different situations. And that really got his game going. And I thought he looked really good playing alongside Jake DeBrusk. So I'm glad he's playing alongside Jake DeBrusk again, coming up against the Calgary game. But Garland comes back on the line with Pettersson, looks like, as well. And considering how Pettersson looked last game and how Garland's played, do you think that could be a duo we see, or do you think we'll see Garland probably get back with Joshua at some point when he gets healthy?
I think, well, I'll go maybe in another direction. I just loved, and who didn't love the way Garland and Joshua played with Bluger mm-hmm. last year?
Yeah.
That third line drove things last year in a very successful season for the Canucks. I wouldn't be surprised to see Joshua, nothing against Bluger, but Joshua with Pettersson and Garland. And I think it was one of those rare cases where the left winger and the right winger on that third line last year really had a chemistry together, as opposed to the center and one of the wingers. And I'm talking about Garland and Joshua. And I think you got to try that with Petey. I think it would really, really work. It'd be a great combination. You know, especially with the big guy on the left side, he can take care of things so well physically. I that would be my guess. And again, I'll, you know, like Dan and his Calder Trophy prediction, I'll probably be completely wrong, but I wouldn't be surprised if that was the case.
I mean, I knew it was a long shot take when I said it, but I didn't know I was going to take this much heat for it.
This is going to haunt you for years. You realize that, right?
It's either going to haunt me or it's going to look great on my resume.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. My apologies.
When Lekker Mäki wins the Calder this year, we'll see who'll be laughing then.
Y'all laughed at me.
So... I guess there's two ways to look at the way this team has started. Like 7-3-3, it's kind of hard to really quibble with the record to this point of the season. But, you know, the naysayer, the glass half empty folk would say, well, they've beaten a lot of the, you know, the lower lights of the National Hockey League. But I think my sort of glass half full take on this one is, you know, last year, Jim Rutherford, how many times did we reference this? He said, everything's got to go right for us to win games and to be a playoff team. And it feels like not a lot's gone right for this team so far this season, and they're still winning games. Is that, to me, that's more of a sign of progress, because I'm not yet worried that this team will eventually find its stride and get its game to a more consistent level than we've seen it through these first 13.
I think when you say to people they're 7-3-3 right now, I think most, and I know it, you know, translates to 7-6, but in today's NHL, 7-3-3, I think most people are surprised. They're surprised that's a decent record. That's a decent sounding record in the face of a lot of adversity. They're missing a Vezina Trophy finalist. You know, they're missing Dakota Joshua, who was so important to the team last year. They can't win at home, or at least they only won one game at home. That's a lot of adversity. And now Besser's hurt. So that's a lot of adversity. So you'd have to think once everything gets in place or gets close to being in place, they'll be just fine. And then, of course, they have the Calder Trophy winner coming as well. So How could things go wrong? I can't let it go. I'm sorry, Dad.
We're not going to let this one go for a while. Yeah. Like it's
all I said is he'll be in the conversation. Now you guys have just taken it to another level.
No, he said it. It's okay. But you know, the thing, too, is about, you're right about the record. 7-3-3 is not so bad. And I agree with Reach, too, that you can look at it positively and that there's a lot to grow from. At the same time, it's not like they've relied on their staples, so to speak. Like last year, they had some trouble spots. They still picked up points, but it was because they were playing really good, clean hockey. That's come and gone. I thought the Kings game, they were terrific. That was their best performance of the season. But we saw that wane against the Edmonton Oilers. They were really bad at protecting the front of their net. And I think goaltending's been a big part of it. So as much as I want to say they're finding their game 5-on-5, they show signs of it, and hopefully that continues and gets better. But the thing that's really allowed them to have this record has been goaltending. If it wasn't for Kevin Lankinen, we could be having a really different conversation about the Canucks' start to the season right now.
Yeah, it was just so strange for him because he made arguably the save of the year. Not just Canuck-wise, but NHL-wise. It was amazing. And then,
I think it's the best save I've ever seen live, like in an arena.
But
I thought it hit the post. It took me like a couple looks on the replay to realize, oh my God, he actually made that save.
We're watching it all. Like, did he save that?
Oh, I know.
It couldn't be possible. But
the only one I can think of recent memory that was better was that Holpe one, that scorpion kick one that he somehow kept it out. That's the only one I can think of.
Well, if you want to go way back, I thought you were going to mention Holpe in the Stanley Cup final.
That too, yeah.
That's going back a bit. But then he has that tough period in the third, and, you know, I don't know, that's just the one moment where he hasn't performed really, really well beyond expectations for the Canucks. So you give him that one. But, maybe it has been. Maybe what the Canucks are up to, maybe it's been masked by some really surprisingly great goaltending by Kevin Lankinen. But I just got to think there's more there for this team.
Donnie, you'll be the first person I call when Lekker Mäki gets into the Calder conversation later this year.
I hope it happens. But I'm telling you right now, I don't know. You know what? I don't even know how this works. You know, radio. All I care about is I'm working. I got a paycheck every 2 weeks. But whatever. You know, you guys do when you look at your ratings. I guarantee that first segment was listened to by more people in the history of Vancouver radio. It was outstanding.
Appreciate that, Donnie. We'll talk soon. Thanks for this.
Okay, guys. Lots of fun.
There he is, Don Taylor, predicting huge numbers for the first segment for the Open on Canuck Central today.
I mean, hot takes, they get lots of attention. And that was a hot take.
It's not that crazy. No, he profiles as a scorer. He's got
it is crazy.
The large majority of the season to still play.
And I love how Reach is like, I mean, I didn't say he's going to win. I just say he's in the conversation. It's like, well, not that crazy to be in the conversation. All he's got to do is play 69 games, score like 25 goals.
Take 25 goals. If he gets around 20, like the conversation is there.
I don't know.
There's some good players.
Like Stankoven has been really good, near a point per game, I think.
Yeah. I mean, Lane Hudson, just because he's a defenseman, I know the defensive side of the game hasn't been great, but he gets a lot of attention.
Celebrini, first overall pick.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah,
Celebrini and Michkov are going to be tough to beat.
I mean, he has a 12-point gap to make up on Stankoven.
Yeah. I'm going to have to call a lot of Vancouver sports writers and be like, make sure you fit Lekker Mäki into your...
You're going to try to accumulate fifth-place votes?
Man...
Reach just
talk about voter fraud. I'm working on it already.
Reach is just trying to book a guest from every single team and just talks up Lekker Mäki.
It's just
he's like, I'll give you Nordnes recipe.
I'll give the sugo recipe that I still haven't given to a rash.
He'll do it for the votes.
It's really not that wild. Honestly,
it's really not that wild. I mean,
Michael Bunting was a Calder finalist a couple
years
ago.
But you say that as if, like, you know, Michael Bunting hasn't accomplished anything.
He was like
anything.
26, you know, so I guess, yeah. It kind of helps in the conversation.
Yeah, I would
he played
say
with
so.
Matthews and Marner for the whole year.
I mean, that's not bad.
But he's, you know, if Lekker Mäki plays most of his minutes with Miller or Pettersson, you know, the possibilities are there. Production could be there. Should be there.
I love how you kind of position the two to Donnie. Like, you know, Canucks fans, you know how they get. It's like, no, man, you're the one who did this.
You did this. Nobody was thinking this. I'm just ahead of the game.
Just ahead of the curve.
Dan Riccio, and Satyar Shah. So Dante Fabro cleared waivers. We want to talk a little bit more about the Canucks defense. David Jiříšek hit the rumor mill again. He played under 10 minutes the other night for Columbus. It was a sixth overall pick a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. Columbus on the right side has Severson. They've got Fabro now, who's an unrestricted free agent at the end of the year. So, you know, maybe they just picked him up to eventually flip him for a draft pick later this year anyways. But they picked him up. They have Erik Branson, who's currently on IR. And then Jiříšek, who's had a really tough start to his career with Columbus. We know he was frustrated with being up and down from the AHL and those kinds of things happening last year, didn't agree with his usage and those kinds of things. So is this potentially an opportunity to add a really talented player at a sunk cost? Do you think there's going to be GMs sniffing around with the Columbus Blue Jackets in the not-so-distant future?
Yeah, yes, I'm sure there are. Yeah. Why wouldn't you? And I know he's had some struggles, but he's still a sixth overall pick from 2 years ago.
Yeah.
He's only 20 years old.
Yeah.
Right? And he still has a lot of development to do. I don't think there are too many roadblocks at the NHL level. Like, you know, you should be able to get past Gudbranson and Fabro if you believe in the player. They have Carson Kuhlmans coming up, though. And if you're keeping Severson, they like Kuhlmans a lot. They got Denton Mateychuk, who plays the left side. But they have some young defensemen coming up, right? And some of those guys, especially Denton Mateychuk, was, you know, a guy that they are very high on. That they think can bring a lot of offense and ability. So has he fallen really far down the pecking order? And Don Waddell did not draft him.
No.
And may view him differently. But he was still a sixth overall pick 2 years ago. I can't imagine they're willing to take a second round pick. I would imagine a lot of teams are willing to maybe trade a second for him.
Yep.
I don't know if they're making that trade now. Mm-hmm. Might be too soon to give up that. So if you're Vancouver, like what realistically gets it done? And listen, I don't think the Willander conversation for Jiříšek makes any sense.
No.
Nor do I think the Canucks would even consider doing anything like that, nor should they consider doing anything like that. So if it's not a first-round pick, because you're not trading your first, and if they don't take a second, like what can you realistically do here to acquire him?
Yeah, you're probably looking at a... You know, I guess a young forward, sort of a hockey trade kind of a thing. I know Nils Höglander has signed an extension, but that's kind of the name we would always bring up in these kinds of conversations before he signed that extension. Could that be something Columbus is interested in?
Because they could sell that as like he's worth more than a, you know, they can sell it as a future top six winger they were getting in return who's young on a controllable contract. So I think he's a nice piece, but, you know. I just, you know, I think that's that the Canucks don't have a lot of cards to play here for guys like Jiříšek. And when people ask us about them, it's like, are you willing to trade Willander? Are you willing to trade Nils Höglander? Because that's kind of probably what they're going to ask for. I think we're a year removed from him going for like a second or a third. He's too young to go for that low of value.
It's now a couple of coaches as well.
Yeah.
Pascal Vincent last year that didn't have a lot of trust in him. And now with Dean Evason. So it's, you know, there's some layers here, and obviously a young player that wants to get in, feels he should be in the lineup. So there's some work there, but an interesting name that's out there in the rumor mill yet again, David Jiříšek. All right, we'll talk about the Canucks defense and get Brandon Astley's take on Jonathan Lekkerimäki. Abbotsford Canucks play-by-play. Does he think Lekkerimäki could have a shot at some real NHL production here?
Or hardware?
I'm not going to put words into...
you'd ask him if he's going to win the Calder.
Words into somebody else's mouth about the Calder Trophy. We'll get to that next on Canucks Central.
The most opinionated Canucks show out there. Canucks Talk with Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drance. Be sure to subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hour number two, Canucks Central, Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah here in the Kintec studio. Tough day to be part of the Pittsburgh Penguins. Through 20 minutes against the Dallas Stars. The Stars put up a touchdown, missed the extra point, but they got six. So through 20, it is 6-0 Stars over the Pittsburgh Penguins. And that situation is not looking like it's getting better for the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Yeah, the Dubas masterclass of 2 years ago is not aging very well.
No, and unfortunately for me, Logan Stankoven has another goal, so his numbers continue to increase.
So now has a 13-point gap on Jonathan Lekkomäki in the Calder race.
Yeah.
In the race in which he's yet to play a single game.
I mean, look, 69 games is enough. Enough games to potentially put yourself on the radar for the Calder Trophy. Brock Besser was runner-up 2 years ago, 62 games he played that year. Scored 29 goals. He was an unbelievable rookie, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he was kind of the leader for the longest time until he like broke
until
his
he got
back.
Hurt, yeah.
Or whatever it was that he had injured.
Cal Clutterbuck with the bench injury, yeah.
Yeah, please don't put Brandon on the spot and ask him if Lekkomäki is going to win the Calder. Let's just keep it to a reach take.
Let's bring in our next guest, Abbotsford Canucks, play-by-play. Absolutely bombs his drive on the tee. It is Brandon Astle. What's happening, Brandon?
Dan, good to hear from you. Sat, you as well. I want to be put on the hot seat. I was listening to you guys before coming on and heard Dan say what I thought at first was an outlandish take about Lekkomäki winning the Calder. But when you sit back and kind of look at it, like there's no one really lighting the world on fire as a rookie right now. Like Stankov is not even a point per game. The front runner, quote unquote, Mishkov is a healthy scratch.
Yeah.
And Lekkomäki has 5 goals in 7 games in Abbotsford. Why can't he get that in Vancouver, right?
So, he's playing first line minutes, you know, so at least power play too. He's going to have room to grow on the power play.
I know. And if you really want to pour some gas on his fire, Dan, who is also a former 15th overall pick not too long ago that leads the league in goals right now? Cole Caulfield.
There you go.
Wow, reach.
I'm all in.
You're Brandon. Like, you know, Brandon, you're like the good teammate that stands up for everybody else. Like, you know, the good strong enforcer, because reach right now feels like he's like 6'2".
Yep.
Reach, just wait till tomorrow. Maybe he pops one or two. And then
this take's really going to take the train, yeah.
Print the t-shirts. I'm telling you, it is not outlandish. I've heard crazier things. I thought you were crazy at first. But after seeing the rookies, what they're doing now, you never know. It is not out of the question with this kid.
Love it. So we've got another one on the Lekkomäki for Calder train. So I take it from the way you've seen Jonathan Lekkomäki in the few amount of games he has played with Abbotsford, he's looked really good to your eye.
Yeah, no, from both aspects. Obviously, starting with the offense, 5 goals over his last 5 games, and he missed the first 4. With an illness, so he kind of came out of the gates later than everybody else, but where there was no kind of rust factor or anything like that. And when you just look at his offensive stats, the one thing obviously that pops out is the goals, but the shot totals, 39 shots in 7 games, like you just don't see those types of numbers from a 20-year-old rookie in the American Hockey League. And obviously that's one of his best assets is his shot, and it really is the real deal. You guys seen it in preseason at development camp. Just the way he gets it off, it just looks different coming off his blade. Whether he's on the right wing, left wing, his release point, switching up velocities. One play that he likes to do that I hope that he does tomorrow or if he keeps playing later this week is he'll take it from like low to high on the left wing and kind of just like walk it to the middle, and like the defenders will kind of be in like a gaze and just kind of watching him. And while they're kind of watching him, there's traffic forming in front, and he'll just kind of sift one, just like a little shot top shelf that gets past a bunch of bodies and the goaltender. Is definitely something that he does on purpose and has scored a goal like that this year. So the offensive game is there. There's no surprise. But I've also been impressed with how he's approached the game defensively. Mm-hmm. And I know if you look at his stats right now, his plus-minus isn't the greatest, but try not to focus on that. It could be a flawed stat. But he's handling the play away from the puck very well, which is always tough for a young guy coming into the American Hockey League, right? Especially from Europe, where it's a different game, a lot more ice. But the Swedes, the Finns, they take a lot of pride in their defensive game. It's almost like they focus on that first when they're growing up playing hockey. And then later on, they pick up the offensive side. I have a Scandinavian background. Unfortunately, I missed that trait and just focused all on offense. But Jonathan has really taken a lot of pride in getting better in that area. And I actually had him on the broadcast a few weeks ago. And I asked him, like, what's it been like on the defensive side? What kind of work are you doing? And he kind of gave me a smirk, like it's something that is kind of keeping him up, and he's doing a lot of homework at night. And mentioned that he's doing a lot of work in practice with Coach Malhotra. Like, what a guy to learn from. The Sedin twins, they're always there at practice in the film room, learning and stuff like that. because he knows it's an important aspect to have, because Rick Tocchet, he needs his wingers, his forwards, everybody in general, to be responsible defensively. We've seen the casualties that couldn't play on their own end, mostly recently Daniel Sprong, and before that Kuzmenko. So I think that he has handled it very well coming in from the defensive aspect, and hopefully that it carries into the NHL.
His skill set is what has him at this level, but it's that mindset that could turn him into a star player, because it's combining the two. And everything that I've heard about Lekkomäki, and you just outlined it really well, is how dedicated he is. For a young player, he's a very serious kid, isn't he?
He's very quiet. He's not going to be the best interview, and I don't blame him. If I went to Sweden in an interview, I would just be an absolute joke. So the fact that he's come over to North America, he never turns down an interview. Yeah. He's going to give you short answers, and fair enough. He'll get better and better with English, but he's very he's humble. He's laid back, but at the same time, like you said, Sad, he takes his craft very serious. I watch him at practice. He's doing the little things with the coaches before and after, obviously working on the shot, working on defensive play, rims coming around to him on the wing, outlet passes, all that stuff. And when he gets to the NHL, he's going to lose some battles along the boards. It's going to happen. He's not the biggest guy. He's about a buck 70, but he thinks the game very well. He has a high IQ, which kind of puts him in areas where he can succeed. And hopefully that he, if he comes back to Abbotsford, maybe he lights it up and gets a Calder. But if he does come back to Abbotsford, he'll have that experience under his belt and knows what he needs to work on to stay in the NHL next time.
So the shot totals, I mean, they're absolutely wild. I mean, even with just seven games, he's, I think, in the top 10 of the AHL as far as shots on goal are, which is crazy because a lot of the guys ahead of him have played double or at least four or five more games than he has to this point. Is he just taking shots from everywhere, even if it's, you know, low percentage, or is he really getting himself into quality areas to get that shot off?
I think he's getting himself into quality areas, especially like on the power play, and teams kind of know that it's going to him on the left wing where he sets up. They want to get him a one-timer, and he does a good job of getting himself open, and that's what the goal scorers do, right? You got to find that quiet part of the ice. You know you're going to be defended pretty hard because you do what you do. You're a goal scorer, and teams have tape on you, and he's only had a short career in the American Hockey League, and you see teams trying to be hard on him, leaning on him in front, trying to keep him away from the net, but that doesn't scare him. Like, he's not afraid to chip in a rebound. His first goal was like an empty net rebound. He put it to the back of the net, came right on his stick, right place, right time. So it's not just all about the outside shots. He's not afraid to get in the slot, look for those rebounds. But obviously, his bread and butter, if you can get him that one-timer on the power play, holy smokes, man. It's like a slingshot coming off his stick, and not much the goaltender can do if it doesn't hit a body in front.
Well, you mentioned, hey, what that shot looks like, and he's one of those guys, I bet, in practice, he just kind of makes you go wow a few times, doesn't he, with how he gets that release off?
It really is. Like, it's different. I remember he had a goal a few weeks ago in Abbotsford. It came on a stick, and it was off his stick before I even could blink, and it was in the back of the net. And it wasn't anything too crazy. Like, he didn't use his legs. It was just, like, his wrist, and, like, the flex he put on his stick was just ridiculous. I actually called it, I'm like, that was stupid. Like, what he did was just stupid. He made it look so easy, but at the same time, like, it was on a stick, it was on the right wing, so it looked like he shouldn't have the leverage that he got, and then it was in the back of the net. It's just like a low shot. It wasn't top corner. It just beat the goaltender. He didn't know where it was until it was in the back of the net. So, like you said, Sad, it's a kid that works hard in practice before, after, shooting pucks, shooting through screens on the right wing, left wing, from the point, on the power play in his spot. Like, this kid is an absolute weapon if he gets time and space and can let it go. And I hope that tomorrow in his NHL debut, he just picks up where he left off from an offensive standpoint, and is just getting some passes from JT, and who knows, maybe buries a couple.
You know, we've seen a lot of the forwards get looks so far this season, right? Lekkomäki is the latest one, but Arshdeep Bains has been up and down a little bit. Nils Åman, obviously Atu Ratu as well. But on D, you know, we're kind of waiting to see how some of these young defensemen develop. What have you made of Kirill Kudryavtsev and Elias Pettersson and the starts to their first full AHL seasons?
Okay, I'm going to take a bit of a breath here. I don't want to overhype a young kid. I don't want to put this pressure on both of them. I'll start with
well, we already did that with Lekkomäki.
You know what?
So
screw it. We're all in, right? Yeah. Who's winning? I think he might win the North instead of Pettersson gets called up.
Let's okay, pump the brakes. Well, hold on here.
All right, let me take a breath.
Yeah.
So through 13 games, we're going with Pettersson first. I think he's probably been the best defenseman on the team. And I'm not even just like saying that, just like his body of work. First of all, the best ability is availability. He's played in every single game this year, and there's 10 defensemen on the roster. There's only one that's hurt, and there's a lot of young guys, so there's a lot of internal competition. Kudryavtsev has been scratched a couple times just because it's a numbers game, and Manny Malhotra just hasn't been able to take Pettersson out of the lineup yet. He's getting his trust. He's playing a ton of minutes, and I think that he's got a game that will translate well into the NHL. And what also I think really helped his development is brilliant by Ryan Johnson and the Canucks management staff was bringing him over last year when his season finished in Sweden. He came in late in the regular season, got a couple games, played in the playoffs. And how much did that factor into him playing well this year? I think that's a lot because he goes back to Sweden after last year. He knows what to expect in the American Hockey League. He knows what he needs to work on. And getting that experience has led him to the success he's had right now. He's a big kid, man. He's 6'3", 210, and he knows it. That's the best part. He knows he's big. He's going out there. He's looking for contact. He's mean. I mean, there's a sequence yesterday in the game against Bakersfield where Josh Brown, he's a massive defenseman for the Condors. He's 6'5", 220, 10 years older than Pettersson. And those two were, like, getting into it behind the play, and then they kind of separated, and then the whistle blew, and then Pettersson went right back to him before he went to the bench, just literally, hey, man, I'm still here. I'm not afraid of you. And that's a guy that will drag the team into the fight. I'm so excited about this guy. And he's only played in 13 games this year. He's only 20 years old. And one thing that goes under the radar is his poise with the puck. Almost to a fault where he made a bit of a mistake on Saturday. It's actually a big mistake. It ended up a goal against. But he's not one to like panic and just rim it or like flick it out to center if there's no hope of a winger or a centerman picking it up. He'll really take his time and like bring it back closer to the goaltender if he has to. Kind of let the play breathe, let it come to him. That's been the biggest thing I've noticed about him. And like, you don't see that with young 20-year-old defensemen. And another thing that I noticed yesterday, he's got some wheels that he doesn't get enough credit for. He had some breakaway speed. I was doing the game with Landon Ferraro, our buddy. And like, we noticed it like, holy smokes, he has some breakaway speed. He jumped up to the rush and just absolutely burned a guy. And his skating's only going to get better, you think. So I'm going to finish there on Pettersson, very high on his ceiling. Kudryavtsev as well. I mean, a seventh-round pick doing what he's doing, also just 20 years old. He looks small, but it's almost like an illusion because he's 200 pounds. He's built. Like, I told him after I interviewed him a few weeks ago, I'm like, you're kind of jacked, man. Like, keep it up in the gym. Let's go. He's like a little pit bull out there. He has no fear. Looks poised beyond his years, kind of like Pettersson. A lot of potential. And I think that he's got a great two-way game. I even asked him, like, what are you? Like, what do you do? And he's like, I think I'm a good two-way defense. I asked him nicer than that. But he's like, I feel like I'm a good two-way defenseman. Maybe more on the offensive side. You can see the tool set he has. He gets some power play time. He's gotten a couple goals this year. And this is a guy that's going to be, I don't want to call it a project. I think that he's going to be an NHL player. I definitely see that in the future, but maybe a few years in Abbotsford. And this kid could be a staple in the Vancouver lineup. And we saw it in the preseason. Like, Rick Tocchet mentioned him by name once during training camp in the preseason. So another funny part, too, I was like in the interview, like in the offseason, where did you think you were going to play this year? Because he could have went back to junior, ECHL, AHL. And he's like, honestly, I thought I'd be in the East Coast and just start there. And now here he is. He's got 4 points in 11 games. And I think as the season goes on here, it's going to be really, really tough for Malhotra to take him out of the lineup.
Well, that's really promising on Kudryavtsev and especially on Elias Pettersson. And we'll see if Pettersson gets a call up at some point this season or if it has to wait until next year. I did want to ask you about a forward that doesn't get talked about a lot as far as, you know, call ups and Canucks fans generally. But anytime I watch him, I'm always impressed. Is Max Sasson the best forward in Abbotsford that Canucks fans don't talk about?
I think that's definitely fair, Sat. I'm a huge Max Sasson fan. And, like, I was thinking about it. Like, he might be the second-best skater in the organization behind Quinn Hughes. Like, it's just effortless the way he strides out there on the ice. Very powerful, not the biggest guy, but when he has the puck, like, the fans can kind of, like, sense that something good's going to happen. He can drive wide. He can pull it to the middle. He's very skilled. He's got a great shot. He's a playmaker. And I mean, last year, he just had a fantastic rookie season. He was a rookie of the year, the Abbotsford Canucks. He didn't hit the rookie wall, which almost every rookie in the AHL does. He didn't hit it. He didn't go more than, I think, two or three games without a point last year. And now he's got 5 points over his last four games. He's really starting to heat up. The thing about Max, though, is that he has to play center, at least for now, whereas there's others like Ratu, he can play the wing. And Nils Åman, he can play the winger center. Baines, obviously more of a winger, but can also has played some center in Abbotsford as well. So if a center spot opens up, I think that Max's name will be thrown around because just his speed alone and how he thinks the game, very solid playmaker, great kid, works hard. I think there's an NHL future for him.
Brandon, we appreciate the time as always, and glad you could be on the train with me for Lekker Mäki's Calder Trophy.
Let's do it. Hat trick tomorrow. Do the Fabian Brunstrom, but don't get taken out of the league in 2 years.
Yeah, that would be that would not be ideal. Thanks for this, Brandon.
No worries, boys. Anytime.
There he is, Brandon Astle, joining us. Abbotsford Canucks play-by-play here on Canucks Central.
Wow, the Fabian Brunstrom name drop caches. I mean, it was
wasn't expecting that.
It was between the Canucks and the Dallas Stars. Goes to the Dallas Stars. Canucks fans were irate, and then he scores like a hat trick. Was it four goals? Even whatever it was, his first game, and then. Yeah. That was the highlight of his career. Yeah.
I thought for a second you were going to bring up Tristan Nielsen again after you glowed about his game in preseason.
No. That was, I think you're thinking about...
Sorry, not Tristan Nielsen.
Ty Mueller. My guy Ty Mueller, who was fantastic. But, he's played a few games. Like, Ty Mueller's got into the lineup.
His details are showing again.
Yeah, they are. I mean, he's played 12 games out of the 13, and he's a college. I like Ty Mueller a lot. But Max Sasson's a guy that when I talk to people at Abbotsford and I ask, when we ask about forwards, who can get a call up, who should we be keeping an eye on? Because fans always, want to know about the skilled guys, too, like Kramacki. And I always hear about Sasson.
Yeah.
And how much they like his game and how much they think there's more to his game too. And anytime I see him, the guy skates really well. He forechecks well. He plays hard. We'll see. I mean, the Canucks have some interesting players. And what he had to say about Elias Pettersson was, he's very high on DPD.
Elias Pettersson is becoming a bigger part of the conversation, maybe because of how suspect the Canucks defense has looked at the NHL level. Now, that doesn't mean he's going to come up and usurp somebody with an NHL contract just yet. But, it hasn't been the best of starts, right? Like Quinn Hughes, not going to fault him, but, it wasn't his best game Saturday night against the Edmonton Oilers. And you feel it when Quinn Hughes isn't at his absolute best because the rest of this decor just can't find a way to pick up the slack. Feels like whatever can go wrong will go wrong for Carson Soucy right now. Vinny Deharnais has been a tough watch, and same goes for Noah Juulsen at times. They've been getting exposed, and I'm not really sure what the solution is here.
I don't think there are a ton of internal solutions. It's the same thing with Deharnais, as we've talked about. He's clearly not the player that they need him to be yet.
Yeah.
And, we've said this many times, but, he's talked about how he's hoping to get better as the year goes on, and hopefully at some point we see that player. I have some doubts, obviously, but that's the lens in which I'm evaluating Vinny Deharnais, because so far it's not great. He's had a couple moments where it's been fine. There's been some games where he's been okay. But when he's under duress and he's facing some real challengers, like you saw Draisaitl, you saw with McDavid, he kind of gets saucerized a little bit too, right? He gets a little panicked. And that's the thing that he really has to reel in. Sometimes players can, sometimes they can't. I'd imagine that's something that they're going to work with him on. You can't lose the front of your net, and you can't lose battles in front of your net, and you can't just kind of get lost in the shuffle there. You have to take a man. That's something that Tocchet spoke about, is in front of your own net, don't try to track the puck. Take the body.
Yeah.
Because if you box your guy out and take your man, wherever the puck comes, you can defend from that point. You can't be in desperation mode and flailing around, and they were so bad at protecting the front of their net. And it wasn't just Deharnais, it was all the D pairs that struggled with that. But that was a staple of their team last year. And for all their faults with guys like Ian Cole, even Zadorov, they were excellent at protecting in front of the net. Zadorov would have some space cadet moments where he'd kind of get lost. But generally speaking, he'd eliminate a guy. He'd take care of somebody, right? And that's something that Deharnais has to do. And that's just the little detail side of it. But I don't know if there's any real, solutions coming. Because even we talk about Yiricek, right?
Yeah.
Canucks fans are like, oh, why don't the Canucks trade for him? How many he's played, 48 NHL games?
Yeah.
But what do you expect?
He's a project,
He's going to be a project too, right? So I don't think there's immediate help coming. And as far as a bigger acquisition, just based on the cap, and we know they're trying to accrue cap space, something has to wait a little bit here, right? So they just have to find a way to not be as bad against really good teams. And I think they can. It's within them. And I don't know how much of last night's, the Saturday game reach defensively was a one-off because not anybody was good. Quinn even struggled.
Yeah.
Or if it was a sign of really problematic things. I mean, we all know they needed to add a defenseman. The question is it acute enough that you have to try to address it now, or can you wait to the deadline?
Yeah. I mean, just one thing you wouldn't expect to see from this group is them to get to lose the physical battle. And Saturday night against Edmonton, like, they lost the battle below the hash marks, like, every time, over and over and over again.
Four of the goals were scored in front of their own net,
and it's just like you can't be having that. And for, you know, Desharnais, Juulsen, you know, he really found a solid level of play last year that you could rely on for 15-16 minutes a night and good PK time. That has been absent so far this year.
It has.
And for Desharnais, I mean, the struggles are obvious there.
But it's also, I think, the part of the issue for a guy like Juulsen. Last year, who was he playing with? It was either
Ian Cole.
Yeah. Ian Cole, sometimes Soucy even, sometimes Zadorov.
Yeah.
Like, those are the guys he's playing with, that guys that were significantly better than he was, and he could easily kind of slot in and play off of those guys, right? And those guys would take care of things. He's playing next to Brännström, where he has to be the more reliable one. And Brännström has showed really well, but he's also a guy that needs somebody better than him next to him,
yeah,
so the coach can trust him more. It's having two guys that next to each other that aren't really at the level, and that's where they're missing the one guy. Really, I mean, sure, you'd love to have to add two really good defensemen. I like Forbort a lot, but Forbort is similar. Like, he's the better version of Juulsen and Desharnais, right? Where he's limited with what he can do, but he makes very few mistakes. He's excellent defensively. He does all the details really well, but very limited ceiling with what he can do with the puck and how he can provide. But you also can't put a Juulsen or Desharnais next to Forbort because they don't complement each other's skill sets at all. So no matter how you slice it, whether it's a lefty or a righty, they need to find somebody who can carry a pair by themselves. You'd love to have a top four caliber, but I'd even settle for a 4-5 right now that makes your third pair better and allows you to take some pressure off Carson Soucy and Myers.
Yeah, and that's probably been what's ended up getting exposed is because Soucy and Myers haven't played so well, and you need them to play a strong game so that you don't have to rely on that third pair as much as they have so far this season. All right, it's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah coming up. Final segment of the show. Did want to get to JT Miller, who continues to be a conversation. Rick Tocchet was asked about him today. We'll play that clip. Get to some other thoughts as well, things going on around the league as we continue on Canucks Central.
Hitting the most important topics for Vancouver sports fans. The People's Show with Vic Nizar. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I've just seen one of the greatest Wheel of Fortune bloopers of all time.
Yeah, that was something. Almost as outrageous as saying Lekker Mäki's winning the Calder.
Man, he's got enough runway to do it. That's the point, okay? He's talented. He's going to score goals. He's going to be on a good team. Could be back in Abbotsford next week, I guess. There's different outcomes, different possibilities.
Yes, there are many.
I'm choosing to take the most optimistic one.
Well, let's hope he becomes that. I mean, I'd love to see it. I'd love to see it.
Yeah. So the man goes to
oh yeah.
It's give yourself a round of applause. And somehow, even though like half the board was already solved, he's like, treat yourself a round of sausage. Like, what?
But the thing is, like, and the A,
you already know the A on the applause.
Yeah. And it's not like there's an A in a space, right? Like, there's... And, I mean, how?
Yeah.
How?
This is my nightmare. Like, getting...
This is why you should...
Having the ultimate blooper reel on Wheel of Fortune, it would be terrible.
He's
terrifying.
Probably, he was probably hungry.
Yeah.
He probably was nervous, didn't eat before, and then got to the thing, so he's thinking about food and thought about sausage for some reason. Yeah.
Give yourself... treat yourself a round of sausage. What? Who says this? I've never heard this phrase in my life.
Give yourself a round of sausage. Yeah,
yeah, treat yourself a round. That doesn't make any sense.
No.
Sorry. All right, now that we've moved on from that, JT Miller, tough night, Saturday night, sat. And look, we've talked about it for a while in how, yeah, JT's not playing at his best. He's not playing as you would expect JT Miller to play. We know that there's been an injury of some kind. We know he hasn't been at 100%, so there is a level of understanding that you're not getting the best version of JT Miller right now. But he's come up in big moments. He's still helped them win games. 5 goals in 13 games, almost a point a game so far this season. If JT's playing, he's getting his points. We know that.
Yeah.
But Saturday night, you know, what, the scoring chances were 9-1. He was only on the ice for 3 shot attempts, 4 on the ice for 3 goals against. It was a tough one for JT Miller, and Rick Tocchet was asked about it today. Here's what he had to say.
Yeah, well, he's hard on himself. You know, he knows there's another level. Yeah, we all know there's another level. You know, the last game was probably his worst game of the year. He'll tell you that. But he's had some good moments for us. You know, he'll round it out. I'm not worried about him. But what I do love, JT, some guys think they're playing well and they're okay. He doesn't. That's what I love about JT. You know, there's, and I shouldn't even say I'm playing well, because I think he's playing fine. And he's trying to find that upper level like everybody else, like our whole team. It's no different than other guys.
There is Rick Tocchet on JT Miller, and Rick is pretty right on JT. There's been times when JT is like scoring a bunch and he's being like, and he'll say publicly after games, like, I'm not playing all that well. So don't be praising me, because I'm really not playing all that well. There's the puck's going in for me. So he is generally pretty honest with his game. And, you know, as he was asked about it, he knows he needs to be better as well. But it's, especially with Pettersson coming out of the gate slow, you're really feeling JT not being at his best right now.
We've talked a lot about Elias Pettersson not shooting the puck as hard and not skating as fast as he did last year.
Mm-hmm.
And there's similar, you know, things with JT. Now, shooting the puck as hard as he did last year, it's still at the 98th percentile top speed so far this year, 97.5. Last year was over 97 miles per hour. So the shot there is fine. And actually, his top skating speed is fine because it's in the 70th percentile. His bursts are in the 77th percentile. But last year, he was in the 85th percentile of top skating speed, and he was in the 98th percentile in bursts. I think one of the things that about JT's game that is very underrated is the bursts he has and the explosiveness, his first few steps. He's a big player, and in a straight line, he's not the fastest guy, but he's fast, but he can explode. And one of the reasons why he's so good with his size is having that burst. And he was amongst the best in the league last year in having those bursts. That is also down a little bit. So he's clearly not moving as well as he normally does. It's still a high enough level that he's been productive and he's been good enough. But against the Edmonton Oilers, it was a bit slower.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I wonder about was the overthinking.
Yeah.
Because when we see JT struggle, it's been when he's too stationary. You saw that. Like, it's, I know you kind of talked about this a couple of years ago when people really criticized his defensive play. It's like, well, it's not so much about him being bad defensively. It's just that he gets too stationary and gets obsessed about protecting one area as opposed to being more aggressive and closing out on guys.
Yeah, and there's been that part of his game. You've seen him, you know, when he's not... It's similar with almost every great player. When they're not at their best, they don't feel like they're acting instinctively. They're just having to, as the old cliche goes, you're seeing the gears turning as they're trying to make the next play on the ice or make the best play on the ice. And when you're thinking, you're dead because you don't have time to think on the ice in the National Hockey League. That applies to JT. And look, I have a hard time being super harsh on this player. It feels like when he's at his best, everybody is on the JT train, ready to chant his name at Rogers Arena. But as soon as there's a couple of bad games and he's going through a tough spell, people are right there with the knives out yet again for JT. And I know the knives have been out for Elias Pettersson for a while now, but he hasn't played well for a while. So you're waiting for that to turn around. And get that that's part of life as somebody making a lot of money in the National Hockey League and being a star player, and there's a level of expectation, a standard people expect you to get to. Ultimately, JT has to be better, and the team needs him to be better. Their ceiling depends on him being better, but I do wonder if part of this is, an understanding of we've got to be better in April and May rather than being at our best here in November.
Kind of like pacing yourself almost.
Yes.
I think to some extent that probably does creep into the thinking a little bit, but against the Edmonton Oilers, this is why I don't think it's anything too serious, because I don't think you're trying to pace yourself against Edmonton.
Yeah, you're not pacing yourself in game 8 against the Oilers.
Yeah, right? Like, you know, it's a big game. You're probably going hard for it.
It's a game you should be jacked for.
Yeah, and the thing, though, is we've seen JT go through these kind of stretches every season. Sometimes it happens earlier in the year. Like, for all the talk about last year's start, he's usually a guy that starts a bit slower. I've seen nothing from JT that I'm concerned about. Like I said, like, you still look at his burst, you look at his skating. It's not quite as good as it has been in the past, but it's not a dramatic fall off.
Yeah.
He's still, you know, well above average in all those markers. I see this stuff coming around. But it becomes something interesting to watch for, because so far this season, we haven't seen both JT and Pettersson play well at the same time.
Yeah.
And when we talk about this team not fully clicking, well, they haven't had their top two centers going at the same time for a very long time now. Even last year down the stretch when JT was going.
Yeah, Lindholm thing, picking up the slack for Pettersson.
And you had him going, obviously, in the playoffs, right? And JT was terrific for the team. I think all that stuff with JT is going to come back. It's more about we haven't seen both these guys really click at the same time. We saw it last year when they were red hot up until January, right? And you saw how this team was almost unstoppable when they had JT and Pettersson going at the same time. So you can be positive too and say, hey, JT's not played his best, but we know it's going to come. Pettersson's best hasn't come, but it's looking like it is getting a little bit better. And this team has shown nowhere near their peak. The best performance they've had was a Kings game, and they didn't even have Besser for 50 minutes in that game.
It's the other part of it is Besser. Right.
Huge, and
with Besser out, and again, Rick Tocchet, I know people made a lot of the day to day thing, but it's more of they're monitoring him day to day as to see how he progresses before they have a timeline of when Besser is really going to be able to get back on track and get back into games. I think that's currently where it sits with Besser. But we haven't seen JT play significant amount of minutes without Brock Besser in a very long time.
Yeah, somebody's texting in about JT doesn't deserve any of this. We're not criticizing JT insofar as being like, he's bad. It's more about, his game wasn't great. And when you look at his game overall, you can tell he's not 100%. He hasn't played at his peak, but he's still been productive. He still has, 9 points in 11 games? Is that what he has? Or is it, he has
11
points in 13 games. Yeah, 11 points in 13 games. It's fine. Like, he's about around a point per game. I'm not worried about it. But we haven't seen his best yet. And he's played alongside Brock Besser. Besser, like, he's been his most consistent linemate. Doesn't have him now, obviously, but he pretty much was attached to the hip with him
for the last two
year
seasons. Really, since Rick Tocchet's come into town.
Yeah, it's has been
Miller and Brock has been his most used duo.
It has been. Yeah, it's the most common duo on this team since Tocchet took over. So he clearly has a duo, right? And that's something that any player needs. And I think that's a big part of his success. And despite him not being at his best, Besser was finding the twine, and you're productive, you're doing your thing. I think it's all going to come for JT. But yeah, like, I don't think we've seen anywhere near JT's best yet this season.
It's going to be interesting to see deployment over the next little while with Lekkerimäki here. And obviously, at least at first, it looks like Miller is going to play with Lekkerimäki. You know, what does that mean for the Pettersson, DeBrusk, Garland line? Are they going up against Tufts more often? And Miller is maybe taking a little bit of a backseat to Tufts right now.
I think it really depends on the matchup.
Yeah.
Like, we saw Pettersson take on Kopitar in LA, right?
Yeah.
JT has essentially gone head-to-head with Connor McDavid now for a couple years.
Yeah.
Pretty much every game. And
even Saturday,
matchup.
It was Pettersson against the Nuge line.
Yeah. And played against Draisaitl a little bit as well, but it was, you know, mostly against Nuge. And JT got hard matched with McDavid.
Yeah.
I think when you have Lekkerimäki there, you're not going to be hard matching.
Yeah.
You know, so depending on the game, and you know, the next couple of games here shouldn't be the most challenging opponent wise for the Canucks, so I think they could get away with it. But it all kind of comes down to which line you want to use in your matchups. And I know there's been people that text in, like Armchair Canuck, who wants to see Pettersson away from that to be the guy who maybe gets some softer matchups to go out and eat offensively and create a bit more offense. But if you have Lekkomäki playing alongside Besser, I mean JT, I don't think that's a spot you can put the kid in right away.
It would be tough. And hey, Calgary's going to be an interesting spot. Again, they're on the second half of a back-to-back. No Anthony Mantha, so the man that JT fought in game one of the season will not be a part of the Calgary Flames. He's got an ACL injury that's going to keep him out for the entirety of the season. That's actually kind of an underrated loss for the Calgary Flames, who've been off to a positive start to this season. Elias Pettersson, we talked about it a little bit with Donnie, but given how much time we've spent talking about how bad Pettersson has been for so long, I feel like it would be unfair to not talk about how well he played on Saturday and how much of a sign it is in a positive direction for Pettersson. And one of the things we talked about in pregame is it felt to me like last week towards the end of the California trip, Pettersson's defensive game in the last little while had really started to come around, and I felt like that was going to eventually start to translate into the offensive end of the rink, as it always has for him. And it turns out like that's really what it was. But there was just I don't know how to describe it, but there was a different jump in his game.
He was moving.
Like, really, from the start. Like, from that first shift on Saturday, there was a different kind of jump in Pettersson's game, a different kind of urgency in his game than we'd seen at any other point this year.
I hate to narrow it down to something so superficial and lacking in real observation, but he had spark.
Yeah.
You know, for all the talk about, we can sit here and talk about all the technique and all the things you got to do. The guy was just alive, right? Like, he was moving quickly, was assertive, making quick decisions. There was power in his skating. He had a couple bursts. He hasn't shown that before. There was a real assertiveness and a confidence to how he handled the puck. You know, like, he seemed like somebody, well, actually, I'm not going to say what I was going to say, but he looks like somebody who had a great day and is like, has a real pep in his step.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's really what it looked like, right? And it's like, okay, now that's starting to resemble the player that people talked about and said, this is not only the player that was scoring, it's a guy that was like alive in games. We've not even seen that spark in his game. He's not, you know, he doesn't have that enthusiasm, or he's not playing with enthusiasm. That was there in his game. And he wasn't, you know, out there, you know, celebrating like crazy, but you even saw when he scored the goal. Like, you know, for Petey, who's been kind of, you know, stoic with celebrations, you know, that one meant a little something to him. Like, he had, it seemed like he had fun, and it seemed like it really mattered to him scoring that goal. And when you feel a bit better about yourself, you can celebrate those things. And maybe that's a sign of him really coming out of this. Because you're right about the defensive side. And that's been one of the things about this year. And as much as he hasn't been good enough offensively, we've always talked about, okay, defensively, there's been moments, but generally he's been good. Like, he's getting better defensively. Because last year, the thing that concerned us about his play wasn't just that he wasn't scoring. He wasn't making the same impact defensively.
No.
You know, we saw it in the playoffs too. It's like, well, you know, forget not scoring, but we know he's a better defensive player than what he's showing. Like, we know he can do those things. And you're so right about it being tied together, because anytime he's been at his best is when he's doing both. And now that game's really coming along, the offense is coming along, it is very early. I hesitate to say Pettersson is back. I really do, because it's been long enough without him actually, quote unquote, being back. But if you start stringing together performances like that, Reach, it's going to quell a lot of concern. And I'll give fans credit. Like, the Canucks got completely pounded by the Oilers, right? But there wasn't this anti-Pettersson sentiment. There was an acknowledgement of, hey, he actually played pretty good. Fans want him to do well. I know fans get frustrated, and we get frustrated sometimes with some of the criticism and some of the stuff that goes extreme. But I think genuinely speaking, they want him to succeed. And when he starts showing a little bit, I think fans are quick to kind of give him that love. I just hope he takes another step. And I love to see like a big performance, right? If he has a 3 or 4 point game against the Flames and dominates, people will say it's the Flames. But as far as him finding his mojo again, I think that's kind of exactly what he needs.
Exactly what you need. And, you know, if that, I mean, he almost tied the game, right? He hits that post and it's so close on Saturday night. It felt like the building was ready to pop off. And you could feel how people, it felt like one of those nights where when Pettersson had the puck, there was an anticipation in the building of, hey, something's about to happen here, because that's the kind of level he had to his game on Saturday. What we'd become so used to seeing and almost got desensitized to.
Yeah.
And now that we haven't seen it in so long, it was like, oh yeah, this is the guy.
Well, it's kind of like the Quinn thing, right? Yeah. Where, you know, Quinn does so many amazing things, it becomes normal. But if you don't see him do it, you're like, whoa, what's going on? Like, yeah. what's wrong with Quinn? Like, we know he's dummying guys every other second, every other shift. Like, why is he not doing that, right? And we're seeing him do that consistently. And, you know, I just hope, again, that Pettersson gets going and we see JT get going at the same time.
Yeah.
Because I want to see at some point this season what the true potential of this team looks like.
We haven't yet seen that. We've seen them in flashes, have some really good moments, really good stretches, but overall, we haven't seen the best that the Canucks have to offer. Quick update on the brand that is Lekkerimäki making a push for the Calder.
The brand? There's a brand?
The Dallas Stars.
He's got clothes made up.
Logan Stankoven has scored a goal, which we mentioned earlier, so he is the Calder Trophy lead right now, I guess, because he has the most points.
Leads rookies in scoring.
Also, Matvei Michkov has celebrated his return to the Flyers lineup with his seventh goal of the season. Or, sorry, his fifth goal of the season. So
he added an assist.
Too, oh, so he's added an assist already as well. Yeah. So yeah, he's up to basically a point per game now.
They heard Reach say Lekkerimäki is going to win the Calder, and they all stepped up their game.
And Lane Hutson earlier today had a pair of assists as well for the Montreal Canadiens at what was a wild game, 7-5. I had the privilege of calling the 10-7 game last year between the Canucks and Minnesota Wild. So I know how wild and crazy like matinee day games.
By the way, your call of that, there was a crazy scrum in that game, right?
Yeah, before Kaprizov goal, but that was a wild scrum.
That was like one of the craziest golden mouth scrums we've seen. Yeah.
The Habs won 7-5. The total shots in the game were 23-18. Like, what kind of 80s hockey was going on today between the Habs and
every
the
Sabres? Puck was going in.
Basically, every puck was going in. Both teams on natural stat trick, which isn't always the best barometer, but neither team had more than one expected goal at 5-on-5.
So that's how bad goaltending was?
And it was 4-4 at 5-on-5.
We got to ask Woodley about that. Was it actually that bad? Was that the worst goaltending performance we've seen in modern history?
It might have been. It might have been. That was a tough one. All right, we'll be watching the Calgary Flames tonight. That's the Amazon Prime game. They're up against the LA Kings tonight. That game already underway, so we'll be keeping an eye on that. If you're watching Monday Night Football, like Randeep Janda, our resident Dolphins fan, is 7-0 for the Fins.
Yes. Somebody was asking us to do a spoiler alert on that, and I was trying to tell you to give a spoiler alert.
He did not do it.
And we waited. I hope that person just wasn't listening. That it's okay. It's fine.
I'm sorry.
I mean, we're on a sports talk radio show, but somebody asked us to give a spoiler alert because of this Fins game. But it's early. It's early. It's not. You know.
It's still early. It's spoiler alert. 7-0 for the Miami Dolphins. And I did just want to shout out the Vancouver Whitecaps. Tough loss for them on Friday against LAFC. It seems like every knockout competition they go into, other than the Canadian Championship, they end up losing to LAFC. Honestly, like, it's hard to fault them. They took the best team in the league to the brink, essentially, and made it close. But that's what's frustrating, is the Whitecaps always feel close but never quite good enough. And I just hope, you know, they see Ryan Gauld, Stuart Armstrong look good. They go into this offseason and find one more piece to kind of add to that, you know, that trifecta, or make it a trifecta in the final third, and be able to really push some of these teams at the top of MLS.
I'd love to see it. And it's not just about getting a star. It's getting a star in the right spot. Like, where do you think they need one?
Ultimately, it's another finisher. Like, for as good as Brian White has been, I think they need another difference maker in the final third of the pitch. Ultimately, that's what ends up making the difference.
So not a left back MLS or something, then, right? Okay, yeah.
No more left backs on DP contracts, please and thank you. It's Stan Riccio, Satyar Shah, producing this fine program today, Arash, and Josh, we're back tomorrow at 4 o'clock. It's a game day. We will be from the rink. Frank Saravalli will be joining us and getting ready for the Canucks and Calgary Flames. Jonathan Lekromäki's NHL debut and the start of a push for the Calder Trophy.
The Calder campaign.
He's got to put up like 3 or 4 points tomorrow.
He doesn't have to. He's got to make up. It's a slow burn, right?
Well, that, well, I mean, so basically, so every game he doesn't score, that means he's going to have to be above a point per game the rest
okay,
of the way.
Okay, we don't have to make analytics about everything, all right? He's just got to...
He's just going to win, magically.
It's going to be like the magic number ahead of the playoffs, but it's just...
Lekromäki just texted in into the text box with the message, please chill.
All right, we'll be on tomorrow at 4 o'clock. We will talk to you then on Canuck Central.